Sundays are a great time to worship, to be in the house of the Lord together as a family. And it extends for me beyond just Sunday morning. Sunday afternoon, I tend to worship the couch and sometimes the TV. No, I don't worship them, but there's something about that Sunday afternoon nap, isn't there? Does anyone else take those? Oh, yeah, all right, guys. Yeah, I'll be thinking of you today. I won't. I'll be passed out. It is great to have a day off, isn't it? Just to be able to relax and recoup. I've been watching World Cup soccer, the women's soccer. Anyone else watching soccer this year? 10 o'clock today, which means it's on right now. On what? 11 o'clock on Fox. So if I can finish this message in 11 minutes. I taped it too. So yeah. It's been interesting. I love women's soccer. I like it better than the men's soccer. I tend to find the women don't whine as much as the men during the game. It's true. I mean, they play hard. And it's really been a joy to watch. I was watching the game between Sweden and the Netherlands earlier this week. It's one of the final games. And it was 0-0 at the end of regulation play. And if you know about soccer, after 90 minutes of play, if the score is tied, they'll do two more 15-minute halves for another 30 minutes. And if it's still tied after that, then they take goal kicks to see who wins. So the challenge with it is, though, you have these ladies who have been playing for 90 minutes in the French summer, right? They've been having a heat wave over there, and they run as hard as they can. It's a huge field, and you're constantly moving in soccer, and there are very limited substitutions in soccer. So most of these players have been playing for 90 whole minutes. To get them to play another 30 minutes, the fatigue really sets in. And you could see it on the faces of the ladies, and you could see their movements. They were really worn out. In fact, anytime a player was injured, you would see the other team members run to the side of the field real quick to get a drink of water. We were joking around it because they call it the hydration break. They get a drink of water. Can we just call it that? You know. So it's hard. Our bodies need rest. They're not designed to go all the time. God knew that. He knew that there were times where we would have to rest. Warren Wiersbe once said this, "The ability to calm your soul and wait before God is one of the most difficult things in the Christian life. Our old nature is restless. The world around us is frantically in a hurry. But a restless heart usually leads to a reckless life." We need times to stop, take a break, and reflect on who we are and who we are in relationship to God. Jesus was not beyond this because Jesus was God, but he was also man. He knew that he needed to take breaks. Let's read Mark chapter 6 and see that. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all the things that they had done and taught. Remember, he sent his disciples out to do the work, and they're back reporting that. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Now, by this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." And as you know the story, Jesus ended up feeding the 5,000 with just two fishes and five loaves, right? So even more work was poured upon them. So after that was done, Jesus immediately made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. So you can see with Jesus, there was this interesting balance. He understood the need for rest and relaxation and prayer. He also saw the immediate needs of the people, and sometimes those needs outweighed his rest, and he would sacrifice time to be with them, but he never allowed it to totally dictate what was going on in his life. So he still found time to pray. He sent his disciples away early, knowing they needed a rest. So he put them on the boat. Then he dismissed the crowds. Then he himself went to pray before God. It's not the only place we see it. In Mark chapter 1, it says this: very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. He had been healing people the day before. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." But Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. So what we see here is, on one hand, Jesus did sacrifice his time sometimes, but he also did not let the crowds totally dictate what he was doing or what he was about. Jesus still found time for rest and for prayer, and still went the places that he needed to go. We need to learn from that. Francis Chan, a great preacher, said this about Jesus. He said, "We think he's a great savior, but not a great role model. The American church has abandoned the most simple and obvious truth of what it means to follow Jesus. You actually follow his pattern of life." Isn't that true? We see Jesus and I want to be saved by Jesus. I love Jesus. Jesus is awesome. But it's not just about knowing him as a savior. It's knowing him as a role model. In other words, following the things he did and the patterns that he laid out. If you truly love Jesus, you try to be more like him. And we need to do that in the church. We need to make sure that we are finding our times for rest and taking a break. Taking breaks are important. Not only does it give us physical rest, but allows us to refocus mentally and emotionally. There's these gauges that we have. We all have that physical gauge on our dashboard. We have that mental gauge and the spiritual gauge. And then there's also the emotional gauge. We are emotional people. Did you ever sit watching a movie, and in the middle of the movie, there's some sad part, and the tears well up, and you just start crying, you can't help yourself? I've had that before. You know, usually that's because the emotions were already there, the pent-up emotions. The movie is just a catalyst to let them out. Because often in life, we let things build up, and we don't have a healthy dose of relaxation or time to reflect, to put our emotions in a proper spot. We have to take those times to rest, to get ourselves reset. There were two woodsmen, and one day the woodsmen challenged each other to an all-day chopping contest. The challenger worked very hard, stopping only for a brief lunch break. The other man had a leisurely lunch and took several breaks during the day. At the end of the day, the challenger was surprised and annoyed to find out that the other guy had chopped a whole lot more wood than he had. "I don't get it," he said. "Every time I checked, you were taking a rest. You chopped more wood than I did." And the other woodsman said, "Well, the thing you didn't notice was every time I took a rest, I was also sharpening my axe." And that's what a good rest does. It's not just about being zoned out in front of the television, although that's fun sometimes. It's about sharpening ourselves, redirecting ourselves, getting our emotions where they need to be, and making sure we know where we need to go. When God called for a Sabbath, it wasn't just to be passed out. It was a chance to reconnect with him. But it does also affect our bodies. Did you know your performance drops as your fatigue increases? Makes sense, doesn't it? Did you also know that if you stay awake 17 hours, it's the same effect as having a blood alcohol content of 0.05%. If you stay awake for 21 hours, it's equivalent to a blood alcohol content of 0.1%. And you know what the effects of that is? Well, first off, a desire to sleep. Well, duh. Lack of concentration, impaired recollection of timing and events, irritability, poor judgment, reduced capacity for communicating with others, reduced hand-to-eye coordination, reduced visual perception, reduced vigilance, reduced capacity to judge risk, slower reaction times. I must be fatigued a lot. The effects of fatigue also increase with age. If you're over 50 years old, you tend to have lighter, more fragmented sleep, which can prevent you from receiving the recuperative effects of a full night's sleep, and can make you more likely to be fatigued during the day. So naps can help with that during the day as well. Lack of sleep has been indirectly linked with health effects such as heart disease, high blood pressure, stomach disorders, mental illnesses, and lower fertility. Now, God knew this. God designed our bodies. He knows how they work and what they need. That's why he gave us the Sabbath, a chance to rest our bodies and reflect and reconnect with our Creator. Because not only do we recharge our physical bodies, but our spiritual bodies as well, which leads to a better emotional state. See, if you recharge your physical body, you reconnect with God spiritually, it'll bring your emotional part to a better place as well. One plays off the other, and we want to be watching for all of those. There was this Greek legend that says there was a man in Athens who met the great storyteller Aesop, the one that did all the fables, and he was playing childish games with all these kids. And the other guy was kind of taken aback by it, because Aesop is supposed to be known as this great philosopher. Why are you playing childish games? And Aesop responded by picking up a bow. He loosened the string, and he placed the bow on the ground. Then he said to the Athenian, "Now answer the riddle if you can. What does an unstrung bow imply?" The man looked at it for several minutes, and he couldn't figure it out. And Aesop explained, "If you keep a bow always bent, it will eventually break under the stress. But if you let it go slack, it'll be more fit for the use when you need it." People are like that as well. We need time to rest so that when we are needed for something critical, we can do that critical thing that we need to do. God, as I said, understands all this, and he commands that we take a Sabbath. Genesis 2 said this, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, so on the seventh day he rested from all his work." God, after creation, rested. "Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." So in Exodus, he tells this to the Israelites. "Say to the Israelites, you must observe my Sabbaths. This will be a sign between me and you for the generations to come, so that you may know I am the Lord who makes you holy. Observe the Sabbath because it is holy to you. Anyone who desecrates it is to be put to death. Those who do any work on that day must be cut off from their people." God was very serious in the time of the Israelites about the Sabbath. The fact that it had capital punishment along with it tells you how serious God was. Now, God wasn't making this to rule over us, just to give us this rule, hey, watch the Sabbath. He was doing it because he knew it was important for us to get that rest and to reconnect. So it wasn't a Sabbath ruling over us. It was a Sabbath made for us that we might be a healthy people. Another pastor wrote this a couple decades back, but it still fits today. "Think of how successful Satan has been in hindering the worship of Christians in the 20th century America. We're workaholics, and in addition, worn out by the time demands of our day. It's no wonder that the quality of our worship is sometimes shoddy. We must have free time to worship, and we must plan our week so that we finish early enough to have that free time. It does take time to be holy. Yet we live in a day when everything is supposed to be done quickly and efficiently. We eat fast foods, we drive in the fast lane, and thus when we come to church, we want our worship pre-digested, pre-planned, and quickly serve up so we can get out and on to better things. God saves us from those time eaters, which causes us to abbreviate our worship." In other words, the Sabbath was given because you really do need it. Don't try and ignore it. Don't try and go around it. Enjoy it. Soak it in. Take the rest. You know, I'm the same way sometimes. I have to admit, I'm sometimes time challenged. Not that I don't take my rest, but even with my church time, I'm always cognizant of, you know, how long is the service going? How long are we taking? I'm always watching the clock up there. By the way, our ministry team made sure that there was always a clock on the back thing, so I'm always staring at that. Sometimes it doesn't seem to mean anything, does it? But I get worried that we're going too long, and yet, how much time do we really take for God? We shouldn't be worried about the length of time. We should be able to sit here and go, you know what, God? It does feel good to put the rest of the world aside for a while and just worship you. Like the song said as I was getting up here. We need to take time for God. So many people carry the pains of this world. They're carrying heavy burdens. You can almost see it when they come into the church. They're so worn down by the things that happened. But that's why the writer of Hebrews said, there is a special rest waiting for the people of God. For all who have entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. So let us do our best to enter that kind of a rest, that sacred rhythm. Wayne Mueller wrote this, Sabbath is more than just a day to catch up on television and errands. Rather, it's a time when we take our hands from the plow and let God and the earth care for things while we drink, if only for a few minutes, from the fountain of rest and delight. So let's make sure we're taking time to take breaks. We discussed this in our teenage Sunday school last week. There were a lot of questions about the Sabbath. When should I do it? You know, when is the right time? And we're going to talk about that when I get back from my own Sabbath. I'll be going on vacation week after next because I need a rest too. And it's important that we recharge those batteries. There are times where I get worn out and I know I'm not giving my best. And it's not for lack of wanting, but it's because of fatigue in my body. So remember, everyone needs a break. Breaks can stop or start momentum. Have you ever thought about that? Sometimes taking a break gets you re-energized, so you get new momentum going when you're done. So it either stops the momentum that's killing you, or it starts a new momentum that energizes you. When moving away from the crowds, it broke the momentum that was against Jesus because the crowds were trying to take all of Jesus' time. So he took a break to stop their momentum from bringing him down. When he prayed before he was arrested and ready to go to the cross, I think it gave him momentum to his heart and the courage to face what was about to happen. So we see Jesus rested after times of intense ministry, but he also stopped and rested and prayed before he was going into times of intense ministry. So his heart was in the right place to take on the tasks he had to take on. Now understand, not all breaks should be filled with nothing. Some of them should. Sometimes you do need to just decompress and let your brain go for a while. Stop thinking about things. So I encourage the nap on the couch. And sometimes a little TV watching is great for that because every show I seem to watch on TV is incredibly mindless. So it really helps me decompress for a while. And that's okay. But that's not all the time. Sometimes a break is for refocusing on God and for church. Let's not put aside this idea of gathering together. When we have church, we have corporate worship. We come to God in unity. It's great to do it alone too, but it's good to be a family together worshiping God. We draw strength from the teaching we get, from the worshiping that we do, and from one another. It's great when we can talk with each other about things that are going on in our lives. You feel less alone in the world. It deepens our spiritual life. It promotes spiritual devotion to get in the habit of following the Bible. And it also, can I be honest, provides accountability. When you're in a church body, we're accountable to one another. We can check in and say, hey, how are you doing? How are you doing really? Have you opened your Bible lately? Are you doing the right thing? It's a good thing to do. Sometimes God calls the break, like a coach. You think of Psalm 23, makes me lie down in green pastures. I love that it says, he makes me lie down, because sometimes God's going to orchestrate things in your life to make sure you do take a break and grab them when you see them. But also understand that breaks have an end, and then you need to get back in the game. In Luke 10, these were the instructions he gave. The harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray to the Lord who is in charge of the harvest and ask him to send more workers into his fields. Breaks are wonderful, but make sure they have their time and the work has its time. We have a lot to do as a church yet. So let's be busy about that work, but let's do it in a healthy way, taking the breaks when we need to. In a certain mountain village in Europe several centuries ago, there was a nobleman who wondered what legacy he should leave for his town people. At last, he decided to build them a church. No one saw the complete plans for the church until it was finished. And when the people gathered, they marveled at its beauty and completeness. Then someone asked, but where are the lamps? How will it be lighted? And the nobleman pointed to some brackets in the walls. Then he gave to each family a lamp, which they were to bring with them each time they came to worship. Each time you are here, the area where you are seated will be lighted, the nobleman said. Each time you are not here, that area will be dark. This is to remind you that whenever you fail to come to church, some part of God's house will be dark. Let's make sure we take the rest that we need, get the breaks where we need them, and then get busy about God's work. The psalmist said, "Let my soul be at rest again, for the Lord has been good to me." Father, thank you that we could be here in church today. I know for some of us, Lord, church is not always rest because some of us have duties here to take care of the children, to lead the worship, to preach the message. So it's recuperative in some ways and not others. So I pray for everyone that they would find their Sabbath time, whether that happens during church, whether it happens home in a quiet space, or whether it's out walking through nature in a park or on a trail. Would everyone in this church experience a time of rest? Some of it physical, Lord, so their body might recoup. Some of it spiritual, so they can reconnect with you. Some of it emotional, so they can get their minds focused in the right place again. But in all those things, Father, may we each find the rest that is so important to have. Father, may we find that rest so that when we work, we are effective at living for Jesus Christ, not just knowing him, but living like him, that we might be a light to the world, that our lamps might not just hang in the church to keep it from being dark, but those lamps might hang in our workplace, in our communities, that people will know there's a place they can come and find true rest from the fatigue of a busy world. We ask it all in Jesus' name.